Hello, this is Brian, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the September 30th issue of the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Trump returns to 51st state rhetoric in speech to U.S. military officials. U.S. President Donald Trump returned to his 51st state rhetoric about Canada while giving an unprecedented speech to top military leaders today. The president was speaking about his Golden Dome missile defense plans in front of military officials who had been abruptly summoned to Quantico near Washington. Trump told the assembly that Canada called a few weeks ago to ask to be part of the missile defense shield. Trump said he replied that Canada should join the United States to get it for free. Trump also claimed Canada is having a hard time because tariffs are bringing business to the United States. Prime Minister Mark Carney has had multiple calls with the U.S. President over the past few months, but has been tight-lipped about the substance of those conversations. Israeli troops kill at least 31 Palestinians in Gaza as Trump peace proposal raises questions. Israeli forces killed at least 31 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip on Tuesday, local hospitals said, as questions churned about U.S. President Donald Trump's peace plan aimed at ending the nearly two-year war in Gaza. Hamas announced it would review the proposal with group members and other Palestinian factions before reaching a decision. While the proposal offers an end to fighting, guarantees the flow of humanitarian aid, and promises reconstruction, the Palestinian militant group will have to disarm, something it has rejected in the past. Also, Gaza and its more than 2 million Palestinians would be put under international control for the foreseeable future. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu backs the plan, and several leaders of Arab countries have applauded it. Palestinians are skeptical of the peace plan. Many Palestinians in the decimated coastal enclave are wary of the proposal. Notably, the plan sets no path to Palestinian statehood and brings a so-called Board of Peace, headed by Trump and former British Prime Minister Tony Blair, to supervise the administration of Gaza. To some, that smacked of the colonial British mandate over Palestine from 1920 to 1948, when the British ran the area. They want to impose their own peace on Mohammed, a history teacher who sheltered with her family in Gaza City, told the Associated Press. In fact, this is not a peace plan, it's a surrender plan. It returns us to times of colonialism. Mahmoud Abu Baker, a displaced Palestinian from Rafah, said the proposal favors Israel and implements all its demands without giving concessions. The proposal tells that we, as Palestinians, as Arabs, are not qualified to rule ourselves and that they, the white people, will rule us, he said. In the Israeli-occupied West Bank, some Palestinians accused Netanyahu and Trump of attempting to solve the issue without any input from people on the ground in Gaza. It turned into a joke. They acted like they owned the whole world, deciding, analyzing, and dividing things however they want, said Mohammed Shadihin, a Nablus resident. Israelis bank on Trump, despite doubt. Israelis visiting a memorial for the music festival where 364 people were killed during the Hamas attack on October 7, 2023, expressed skepticism that the proposal may pause the war. Amit Zander, whose daughter, Noah Zander, was killed at the festival, said Trump was the only one with enough power to make a deal happen. Everyone pins their hopes on Trump. It's up to Hamas. Israel wants it, and beyond that, it's no longer in our hands, he said. It's definitely an effort to change something, but there have been efforts the whole time during this whole war, and change hasn't really happened. So I think it's all up in the air, said Adi Nisim, who was also visiting the memorial on Tuesday. More than 30 Palestinians killed. Israeli forces killed at least 31 Palestinians on Tuesday, according to local hospitals. Al-Auda Hospital said Israeli troops opened fire, killing 17 Palestinians and wounding 33 others while they were attempting to access humanitarian aid in Nazarim, the Israeli-controlled corridor that bisects northern and southern Gaza. An Israeli strike later in the day killed 4 people in central Gaza's Nusayrat refugee camp, the hospital said. Israeli forces also hit 2 tents housing displaced Palestinian families in Mawasi, the stretch of tent cities along the Mediterranean coast that the Israeli military had once declared a safe zone. One of the strikes killed 7 people, including 4 women and a child, who had fled from Gaza City earlier this month to escape Israel's intensifying offensive, Al-Aqsa Hospital said. The second killed a man, his 7 months pregnant wife, and their young child, Nasser Hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis said. The Israeli military did not immediately comment on the shooting or strikes. It said in a statement that over the past 24 hours, its troops killed several armed militants and struck more than 160 targets of Hamas infrastructure, including weapons storage facilities and observation posts. Hamas is believed to be holding 48 hostages, 20 of whom are believed by Israel to be alive. The militant group has previously demanded that Israel agree to end the war and withdraw from all of Gaza as part of any permanent ceasefire. Gaza's health ministry said in its daily report the death toll has surpassed 66,000, with almost 170,000 wounded since the war began. The ministry, part of the Hamas-run administration, does not differentiate between civilians and militants in its toll, but has said women and children make up around half the dead. Its figures are seen as a reliable estimate by the UN and many independent experts. Israel accuses Hamas of hiding its military infrastructure in civilian areas. Israel's offensive has destroyed vast areas of Gaza, displacing around 90% of the population amid a catastrophic humanitarian crisis, with experts saying Gaza City is experiencing famine. U.S. government on brink of first shutdown in almost 7 years during partisan standoff. A partisan standoff over health care and spending is threatening to trigger the first U.S. government shutdown in almost 7 years, with Democrats and Republicans in Congress unable to find agreement, even as thousands of federal workers stand to be furloughed or laid off. The government will shut down at 12:01 a.m. Wednesday if the Senate does not pass a House measure that would extend federal funding for 7 weeks while lawmakers finish their work on the annual spending bills. Senate Democrats say they won't vote for it unless Republicans include an extension of expiring health care benefits, among other demands. President Donald Trump and his fellow Republicans say they won't negotiate, arguing that it's a stripped-down, clean bill that should be non-controversial. It's unclear if either side will blink before the deadline. "It's only the president who can do this. We know he runs the show here," Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer said Tuesday morning after a bipartisan White House meeting the day before yielded little apparent progress. Schumer said Republicans are trying to bully Democrats by refusing to negotiate. "Republicans have until midnight tonight to get serious with us," Schumer said. Trump posted a fake mocking video of Democrats after the meeting. "They lost the election in a landslide, and they don't change," Trump said Tuesday morning. While partisan stalemates over government spending are a frequent occurrence in Washington, the current impasse comes as Democrats see a rare opportunity to use their leverage to achieve policy goals and as their base voters are spoiling for a fight with Trump. Republicans who hold a 53-47 majority in the Senate would likely need at least 8 votes from Democrats to end a filibuster and pass the bill with 60 votes, since Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky is expected to vote against it. The last shutdown was in Trump's first term, from December 2018 to January 2019, when he demanded that Congress give him money for his U.S.-Mexico border wall. Trump retreated after 35 days, longest shutdown ever, amid intensifying airport delays and missed paydays for federal workers. No agreement at the White House. The bipartisan meeting at the White House on Monday was Trump's first with all four leaders in Congress since retaking the White House for his second term. But Trump made it clear he had little interest in negotiations. Their ideas are not very good ones, Trump said of Democrats before the meeting. Schumer had appeared to be holding out hope that Trump could be open to a deal. He told reporters afterward that the group had candid, frank discussions about health care. He said Trump was not aware of the potential for health insurance costs to skyrocket once expanded Affordable Care Act tax credits expired December 31st. But Trump did not appear to be ready for serious talks. Hours later, Trump posted a fake video of Schumer and House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries, taken from footage of their real press conference outside of the White House after the meeting. In the altered video, a voiceover that sounds like Schumer's voice makes fun of Democrats, and Jeffries stands beside him with a cartoon sombrero and mustache. Mexican music plays in the background. At a news conference on the Capitol steps Tuesday morning, Jeffries said it was a racist and fake AI video. Schumer said that we have less than a day to figure this out, and Trump is trolling on the internet like a 10-year-old. Democrats' health care risks. Millions of people could face higher insurance premiums if the health care subsidies expire at the end of the year. Congress first put them in place in 2021 during the COVID-19 pandemic to expand coverage for low and middle income people who purchase health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. Democrats say they want the subsidies immediately extended. They have also demanded that Republicans reverse the Medicaid cuts that were enacted as a part of Trump's Big Beautiful Bill this summer, and for the White House to promise it will not move to rescind spending passed by Congress. We are not going to support a partisan Republican spending bill that continues to gut the health care of everyday Americans, Jeffries said on Monday. Senate Majority Leader John Thune has pressed Democrats to vote for the funding bill and take up the debate on tax credits later. Some Republicans are open to extending the tax credits, but many are strongly opposed to it. Thune has said Republicans would want new limits on the expanded subsidies, something Democrats would not likely to agree to. In a back and forth with Schumer on the Senate floor Tuesday morning, Thune said Republicans are happy to fix the ACA issue and have offered to negotiate with Democrats if they will vote to keep the government open until November 21st. Thune said Democrats would have the same leverage then as they do now, a crucial and unusual vote for Democrats. Democrats are in an uncomfortable position for a party that has long denounced shutdowns as pointless and destructive, and it's unclear how or when it would end. But party activists and voters have argued that Democrats need to do something to stand up to Trump. Some groups called for Schumer's resignation in March after he and nine other Democrats voted to break a filibuster and allow a Republican-led funding bill to advance to a final vote. Schumer said then that he voted to keep the government open because a shutdown would have made things worse, as Trump's administration was slashing government jobs. He says now that he believes things have changed, including the passage this summer of the massive GOP tax cut bill that reduced Medicaid. Some of the Democrats who voted with Schumer in March to keep the government open were still holding out hope for a compromise. Michigan Senator Gary Peters said Monday there's still time before the early Wednesday deadline. A lot can happen in this place in a short period of time, Peters said. Shutdown preparations begin. The stakes are huge for federal workers across the country, as the White House told agencies last week that they should consider a reduction in force for many federal programs if the government shuts down. That means that workers who are not deemed essential could be fired instead of just furloughed. Either way, most would not get paid. Trump said Tuesday that we may do a lot of layoffs, and it's only because of the Democrats. Trump's budget director, Russ Vogt, told reporters at the White House that a shutdown would be managed appropriately, but it is something that can all be avoided if Senate Democrats accept the House-passed bill. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Strong earthquake in central Philippines sends people out of homes and sparks local tsunami warning. A strong offshore earthquake with a preliminary magnitude of 6.9 shook the central Philippines late Tuesday, sending people dashing out into streets, damaging a stone church, and prompting a local tsunami warning. The earthquake was centered about 10 miles northeast of Bogo City in Cebu Province. The Philippine Institute of Volcanology and Seismology issued a tsunami warning and advised people to stay away from the coastlines in Cebu and in the nearby provinces of Leyte and Biliran due to possible waves of up to 3 feet. Teresito Bacolcol, director of the institute, told the Associated Press that damage and aftershocks were expected. Power went out in the Cebu provincial town of Don Bantayan, where the stone church is located. The extent of the damage to the church was not immediately known. Central Philippine provinces were still recovering from a storm that hit on Friday, leaving at least 27 people dead, mostly due to drownings and falling trees, knocking out power in entire cities and towns, and forcing the evacuation of tens of thousands of people. The Philippines, one of the world's most disaster-prone countries, is often hit by earthquakes and volcanic eruptions due to its location on the Pacific Ring of Fire, an arc of seismic faults around the ocean. The archipelago is also lashed by about 20 typhoons and storms each year. Hamas says it will study Trump's peace plan before responding. Hamas said Tuesday it will discuss U.S. President Donald Trump's peace plan for Gaza within the group and with other Palestinian factions before responding. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has already thrown his support behind it, but it's unclear whether Hamas will agree and when it will give its response. The proposal demands that Hamas effectively surrender and disarm in return for an end to fighting, humanitarian aid for Palestinians, and the promise of reconstruction in Gaza, all desperately hoped for by the population in the devastated territory where the death toll in the Israel-Hamas war has topped 66,000 Palestinians, according to Gaza's health ministry. Meanwhile, backing and support were pouring in for the proposal from the international community. Trump and Netanyahu said after talks Monday at the White House that they had agreed on the plan. Here's the latest. Italy gives final warning to aid flotilla as it nears Gaza. The Italian Defense Ministry said it expected the flotilla boats bringing humanitarian aid to Gaza to reach the 150 nautical mile limit off Gaza at around 2 a.m. in Italy Wednesday, and sent a new warning Tuesday to the boats participating about the risks. Italy has warned flotilla organizers that Israel would consider their incursion beyond that limit as a hostile act. The government has been working for weeks to find an alternate solution to get the aid to Palestinians, including a proposal rejected by flotilla organizers to bring the aid instead to Cyprus and have the Catholic Church deliver it. The Defense Ministry repeated that the Italian Navy frigate Apino dispatched to the region as a precaution in case rescue operations were necessary, was available to take any flotilla participants on board who wanted to transfer. But in a statement, the ministry said the Alpino would not cross the 150 nautical mile limit off Gaza's coast. A final warning will be issued tomorrow, October 1st, upon reaching 150 nautical miles from the coast of Gaza, where the military vessel will stop and remain available for any assistance and rescue operations, according to a statement from the Ministry's Defense Staff Unit. Hamas has a difficult choice to make, analyst says. Sadek Abu Amer, head of the Turkey-based think tank Palestinian Dialogue Group, said the Trump proposal places Hamas in front of a difficult choice. The proposal on its face meets Hamas's main demands, but on the other hand, it stipulates that Hamas will not be present the day after the war at all. In addition to the international guardianship of the Gaza Strip, its separation from its territory, and its separation from the West Bank and the freezing of the path of a two-state solution, Abu Amer said. However, given the balance of power in the field and pressure from its regional allies, Abu Amer said it is likely Hamas will take the poison and accept this initiative. The allied but much smaller militant group, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, has publicly stated its rejection of the proposal, an apparent complication since it is believed to also hold some of the Israeli hostages. However, Abu Amer believes Hamas can impose its decision on the more marginal factions, and that if the Islamic Jihad does have hostages, Hamas will be able to recover them if it decides to accept the deal. The UK sanctioned 70 people and organizations with links to Iran's nuclear program. The sanctions came amid concerns the Islamic Republic is developing weapons, the British Foreign Office said Tuesday. The penalties aimed at 62 groups and 9 people follow a decision by Britain, France, and Germany last month to trigger the snapback mechanism to automatically reimpose all United Nations sanctions on Iran over its nuclear program. The three nations, known as the E3, said at the time that Iran had willfully departed from the 2015 nuclear deal that lifted the measures. Iran's nuclear program has long been a serious concern to the international community as a significant threat to global peace and security, Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper said. This sanctions package sends a clear message to Tehran. We will continue to take every step necessary to prevent Iran ever developing a nuclear weapon. The UN sanctions in effect before the deal included a conventional arms embargo, restrictions on ballistic missile development, asset freezes, travel bans, and a ban on producing nuclear-related technology. Tehran now enriches uranium at near weapons-grade levels. Trump, Hamas has 3 or 4 days to respond to proposal. Hamas is either going to be doing it or not, U.S. President Donald Trump told reporters at the White House. And if it's not, it's going to be a very sad end. The president added there was not much room for Hamas to negotiate under the terms of his latest peace proposal, which he unveiled Monday. Qatari and Egyptian officials have presented the proposal to Hamas negotiators, who are now reviewing it. Trump on Monday said Israel would have his administration's full backing to destroy Hamas if the group does not agree to the deal. Asked on Tuesday what American support would amount to, the president declined to provide details, but expressed confidence that Israel would be able to take decisive action. I would let them go do what they have to do, Trump added. They could do it pretty easily. Israeli forces kill 31 people in Gaza. Israeli forces killed at least 31 Palestinians on Tuesday, according to local hospitals. Al-Ada Hospital said Israeli troops opened fire, killing 17 Palestinians and wounding 33 others while they were attempting to access humanitarian aid in Netzarim, the Israeli-controlled corridor that bisects northern and southern Gaza. An Israeli strike later in the day killed 4 people in central Gaza's Nusrat refugee camp, the hospital said. Israeli forces also hit 2 tents housing displaced Palestinian families in Moasi, the stretch of tent cities on the Mediterranean coast that the Israeli military had once declared a safe zone, killing 10 people. The Israeli military did not immediately comment on the shooting or strikes, saying its troops had killed several armed militants and struck more than 160 targets of Hamas infrastructure in the past 24 hours. Israeli foreign minister says it's now up to Hamas. Gideon Saar said that his country has accepted Trump's plan for ending the war in Gaza and for a better future, and that is now up to Hamas to announce its position. We will now see if Hamas accepts the president's plan, Saar said during a visit to Belgrade, Serbia's capital. He accused Hamas of trying in the past to change the terms or avoid implementing any past agreements. We will see, he said. We want to see our hostages come home after 2 years, alive and dead, Saar said. We also want to see a different Gaza, de-radicalized, demilitarized, and no longer posing a threat to Israel and its citizens. Serbia's foreign minister, Marko Juric, said Belgrade also backs the peace proposal and demands the release of the hostages held in Gaza, one of whom holds dual Israeli-Serbian citizenship. The Kremlin says Russia hopes Trump's plan for Gaza succeeds. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said in a call with the reporters that Russia welcomes Trump's efforts aimed at ending the ongoing tragedy, and that Moscow officials certainly wish that this plan is implemented and helps achieve peace in the Middle East. Peskov noted that Russia has maintained contacts with all parties to the conflict and stands ready to take efforts to help the settlement if asked to do so. The UN, though not involved in Trump's plan, says it's ready to step up Gaza aid. The United Nations says it's prepared to increase aid deliveries into Gaza whenever possible. Deliveries by UN agencies and its partners have been largely limited in recent months as Israel has allowed a separate organization, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, to ferry in aid. Trump's plan says that aid entries will proceed without interference by Israel or Hamas through the United Nations and its agencies and the Red Crescent, in addition to other international institutions not associated in any manner with either party. Alessandra Vellucci, a UN Geneva spokesperson, said the world body is in contact with various parties about the peace efforts. We welcome all the mediation. Jens Lark, a spokesman for UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, said the UN stands ready and prepared and capable to increase aid deliveries inside Gaza whenever the opportunity is such that we are allowed to do so and the safety and security of doing so is there indeed. China reiterates its support for a two-state solution. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhu Xinqian said Beijing calls on all relevant parties to immediately achieve a comprehensive ceasefire in Gaza, release all detainees, and alleviate the humanitarian disaster in the region as soon as possible. China supports a two-state solution and is willing to work with the international community for a comprehensive, just, and lasting resolution of the Palestinian issue, Gao added. Germany's chancellor says Trump's plan is best chance for ending the war. Chancellor Friedrich Merz thanked Trump for his persistent efforts and Arab and Muslim countries in the Middle East for their influence with Hamas. He said Germany remained in close contact with its European neighbors and the United States on the issue. Merz's statement came shortly after Merz on Tuesday hosted relatives of German hostages of Hamas. During the meeting, he said the suffering of the hostages must end now and called on Hamas to release all hostages, according to the statement. Spain says a two-state solution is the only possible one for Israel and the Palestinians. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez welcomed the U.S. peace proposal and said a two-state solution was the only possible one for the Middle East. It is time for the violence to cease, for the immediate release of all the hostages to take place, and for humanitarian aid to be provided to the civilian population, Sanchez wrote on X. Spain has been an outspoken critic of Israel's war in Gaza, with Sanchez earlier this month calling Israel's conduct a genocide. Turkey ready to help the Gaza flotilla with humanitarian needs. Turkey's defense ministry said it's closely monitoring the eastern Mediterranean and that its ships in the region are prepared to assist humanitarian missions if needed. A reference to the Gaza-bound global Samud flotilla seeking to break the Israeli blockade of the territory. A day earlier, the Turkish Navy helped evacuate activists on board Johnny M., one of the flotilla vessels, after it began taking in water in an area off the coast of Crete, Turkey's state-run Anadolu agency reported. Meanwhile, at least three activists working with the flotilla from Egypt were arrested in Cairo, the flotilla committee said. It's unclear where they are being detained. Some of the activists in Egypt plan to join the group of more than 50 small vessels, carrying activists from dozens of countries, attempting to break Israel's blockade on Gaza. The flotilla includes 52 mostly small vessels carrying activists from dozens of countries and a symbolic amount of humanitarian aid, mainly food and medicine, for Palestinians in Gaza. Hamas has no choice but to release hostages and accept the plan, Macron says. French President Emmanuel Macron says he welcomes Trump's commitment to ending the war in Gaza and securing the release of all hostages. I expect Israel to engage resolutely on this basis. Hamas has no choice but to immediately release all hostages and follow this plan, Macron posted on X. Hamas to study Trump's proposal before responding. A senior Hamas official told the Associated Press that the group's leaders will hold internal discussions as well as talks with other Palestinian factions before they respond to the Trump proposal. The official added that Hamas received the proposal from the two Mideast mediators, Egypt and Qatar, and will begin studying it today with other factions. There was no indication when Hamas could give its response to the plan. The official spoke on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to talk to the media. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Iran hangs a man accused of spying for Israel in a wave of executions. Iran said Monday it hanged a man accused of spying for Israel, the latest in the largest wave of executions by Tehran in decades. Iran identified the executed man as Bahman Chubaisal. His case wasn't immediately known in Iranian media reports or to activists monitoring the death penalty in the Islamic Republic. The execution came as Iran vowed to confront its enemies after the United Nations reimposed sanctions on Tehran over its nuclear program this weekend. The European Union followed suit Monday, imposing similar sanctions on Iran. Iran accused Chubaisal of meeting with officials from the Israeli spy agency Mossad, calling him the agency's most trusted spy. Iran's Mizan News Agency, which is the judiciary's official mouthpiece, said Chubaisal worked on sensitive telecommunications projects and reported about the paths of importing electronic devices. Iran is known to have hanged 9 people for espionage since its June war with Israel. Israel waged an air war with Iran, killing some 1,100 people, including many military commanders. Iran launched missile barrages targeting Israel in response. Earlier this month, Iran executed Babak Shahbazi, who it alleged spied for Israel. Activists disputed that, saying Shahbazi was tortured into a false confession after writing a letter to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky offering to fight for Kiev. Iran routinely conducts closed-door trials of those accused of espionage, which the suspects often unable to access evidence against them. Iran has faced multiple nationwide protests in recent years, fueled by anger over the economy, demands for women's rights, and calls for the country's theocracy to change. In response to those protests and the June war, Iran has been putting prisoners to death at a pace unseen since 1988, when it executed thousands at the end of the Iran-Iraq war. The Oslo-based group Iran Human Rights and the Washington-based Abdurrahman Burahman Center for Human Rights in Iran put the number of people executed in 2025 at over 1,000, noting the number could be higher as Iran does not report on each execution. Independent human rights experts at the United Nations also criticized Iran's executions Monday. The sheer scale of executions in Iran is staggering and represents a grave violation of the right to life, the experts said. With an average of more than 9 hangings per day in recent weeks, Iran appears to be conducting executions at an industrial scale that defies all accepted standards of human rights protection. FBI boss Kash Patel gave New Zealand officials 3D printed guns illegal to possess under local laws. On a visit to New Zealand, FBI Director Kash Patel gave the country's police and spy bosses gifts of inoperable pistols that were illegal to possess under local gun laws and had to be destroyed, New Zealand law enforcement agencies told the Associated Press. The plastic 3D printed replica pistols formed part of display stands Patel presented to at least 3 senior New Zealand security officials in July. Patel, the most senior Trump administration official to visit the country so far, was in Wellington to open the FBI's first standalone office in New Zealand. Pistols are tightly restricted weapons under New Zealand law, and possessing one requires an additional permit beyond a regular gun license. Law enforcement agencies didn't specify whether the officials who met with Patel held such permits, but they couldn't have legally kept the gifts if they didn't. It wasn't clear what permissions Patel had sought to bring the weapons into the country. A spokesperson for Patel told the AP Tuesday that the FBI would not comment. The pistols were surrendered and destroyed. Inoperable weapons are treated as though they're operable in New Zealand if modifications could make them workable again. The pistols were judged by gun regulators to be potentially operable and were destroyed, New Zealand's police commissioner Richard Chambers told AP in a statement Tuesday. Chambers didn't specify how the weapons had been rendered inoperable before Patel gifted them. Usually this means the temporary disabling of the gun's firing mechanism. 3 of New Zealand's most powerful law enforcement figures said they received the gifts at meetings July 31st. Chambers was one recipient, and the other 2 were Andrew Hampton, Director General of the country's Human Intelligence Agency, NZSIS, and Andrew Clark, Director General of the Technical Intelligence Agency, GCSB, according to a joint statement from their departments. A spokesperson for the spy agencies described the gift as a challenge coin display stand that included the 3D printed inoperable weapon as part of the design. The official sought advice on the gifts the next day from the regulator that enforces New Zealand's gun laws, Chambers said. When the weapons were examined, it was discovered they were potentially operable. To ensure compliance with firearm laws, I instructed police to retain and destroy them, Chambers said. James Davidson, a former FBI agent who is now president of the FBI Integrity Project, a nonprofit that seeks to safeguard the Bureau from undue partisan influence, has criticized Patel's appointment. But Davidson said the gift of the replica pistols appeared a genuine gesture from Patel, and their destruction was quite frankly an overreaction by the NZSIS, which could have simply rendered the replica inoperable, he said. New Zealand has strong gun controls. 3D printed weapons are treated the same as other guns in New Zealand. The country bolstered its gun restrictions following a 2019 white supremacist attack on 2 mosques in the city of Christchurch, when 51 Muslim worshippers were shot dead by an Australian man who had amassed a cache of semi-automatic weapons legally. The guns Patel gifted to the law enforcement chiefs were not semi-automatic models now prohibited after the Christchurch massacre. but there are a suite of other reasons New Zealanders might not legally be able to possess certain weapons, including the specific permits required for pistols. New Zealand doesn't have a passionate culture of gun ownership, and the weapons have been viewed more dimly since the mass shooting. Gun ownership is enshrined in New Zealand law as a privilege, not a right. The country isn't short on guns. They're common in rural areas for pest control. But violent gun crime is rare, and many urban residents might never have even seen a firearm in person. It's uncommon even to see police officers carrying weapons. Frontline officers aren't usually armed on patrol and leave their weapons locked in their vehicles. Patel caused discomfort with China remarks. News of Patel's visit caused ripples in New Zealand at the time because the opening of the new FBI field office in Wellington wasn't divulged to news outlets or the public until it had already happened. An FBI statement in July said the move aligned New Zealand with FBI missions in other Five Eyes intelligence-sharing nations, which also include the United States, Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom. The office would provide a local mission for FBI staff who have operated with oversight from Canberra, Australia, since 2017, the statement said. Public records disclosed to local news outlets this month revealed that Patel met with and dined with more than a dozen senior public servants and elected officials, including cabinet members, during his visit. It wasn't immediately clear Tuesday how many officials received the pistols as gifts. Patel had already provoked mild diplomatic discomfort in Wellington by suggesting in remarks supplied to reporters that the new FBI office aimed to counter China's influence in the South Pacific Ocean, where New Zealand is located. The comments prompted polite dismissal from officials in Wellington, who said the bolstered FBI presence was primarily to collaborate on child exploitation and drug smuggling crimes. Beijing decried Patel's remarks. A weakened and isolated Hamas faces pressure to accept Trump's peace plan for Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu may have finally outmaneuvered Hamas. After facing months of genocide accusations, pariah status, and global pressure to halt the war in Gaza, Netanyahu has agreed on a ceasefire plan with U.S. President Donald Trump. The 20-point plan, unveiled by Trump and Netanyahu at the White House, greatly favors Israel. Hamas says it is still studying the plan and will respond soon, but with Trump rallying international support for it, including from Hamas's closest allies, the Islamic militant group could have a tough time refusing the proposal. Instead of Hamas isolating us, we turned the tables and isolated Hamas, Netanyahu boasted in a social media video before leaving Washington. Here's a closer look, Netanyahu's vision of total victory. Throughout nearly 2 years of war, Netanyahu has promised to push ahead until total victory, not only returning hostages held by Hamas and defeating the group on the battlefield, but pushing it out of power and destroying its military capabilities. Given Hamas's deep roots in Palestinian society, critics have derided this vision as unrealistic, but Trump's plan largely validates this goal. Hamas would have to release all hostages, alive and dead, within days of the plan taking effect. It would be forced to disarm and turn over power to a group of apolitical technocrats, supervised by an international body led by Trump and former British Prime Minister Tony Blair. Israel would maintain an open-ended military presence inside Gaza, along its border with Israel. An international force, comprised largely of troops from Arab and Muslim countries, would be responsible for security inside Gaza. The U.S. would lead a massive, internationally funded reconstruction effort in Gaza. The plan envisions an eventual role for the Palestinian Authority, something Netanyahu opposes. but it requires the authority which administers parts of the West Bank to undergo a sweeping reform program that could take years to implement. The Trump plan is even more vague about a future Palestinian state, another non-starter with Netanyahu. While it refers to a possible credible pathway to a two-state solution, the language is unclear and there are no timelines, leaving the door open for Netanyahu to delay or ignore the issue. In his social media video, Netanyahu insisted he had not agreed to a Palestinian state. "It's a danger to Israel, and of course we won't agree to it," he said. So what's in it for Hamas? Hamas, which triggered the war on October 7, 2023, can claim some victories under the plan. Most critically, it requires Israel to release hundreds of Palestinian prisoners, including some 250 who are serving life sentences for convictions in deadly attacks on Israelis. Such releases are painful and unpopular for the Israeli public. Palestinians, however, view the prisoners as heroes and victims in a struggle against Israeli occupation, and any release would be seen by the Palestinian public as a major accomplishment. Hamas can also claim that it forced Netanyahu to acknowledge Palestinian statehood aspirations, even if the wording in the plan is vague. Israel also made other concessions. Trump and Israel abandoned a plan to push Gaza's 2 million Palestinians out of the territory. The new proposal says all Palestinians can stay, and anyone who decides to leave will be allowed to return. Israel also pledged not to annex or resettle Gaza, a dream favored by Netanyahu's ultranationalist coalition allies. That comes after Netanyahu, under U.S. and Arab pressure, appears to have dropped his threats to annex the West Bank. The Trump plan does not mention the West Bank. Arab officials, speaking on condition of anonymity to discuss the closed-door negotiations, said such language was removed at Israel's request. An offer it can't refuse. Despite its small gains, Hamas appears to come out the big loser under the Trump plan. Yet it may not be able to refuse the offer. Trump told reporters at the White House on Tuesday that Hamas has 3 or 4 days to respond to the proposal. After 2 years of war, Hamas has suffered heavy losses and wields only a small fraction of the power it once held. While it's difficult to assess its popularity in Gaza, it is clear that many in the devastated territory want the war to end at any cost. In addition, its main allies in the region, Iran and the Lebanon-based militant group Hezbollah, have been greatly weakened by Israeli and American attacks. Arab countries' expressions of support for the proposal also could back Hamas into a corner. A joint statement by Arab and Muslim countries welcomed the proposal and expressed their readiness to work toward finalizing and implementing it. They included Turkey, Egypt, and Qatar, which have good working ties with Hamas, and other influential countries such as Jordan, the United Arab Emirates, Indonesia, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia. Still, the text of the proposal released by the White House on Monday raised reservations among some Arab countries, Arab officials told the Associated Press. They said the text had been changed from what they had discussed with Trump previously to make it more favorable to Israel. They pointed to the vague terms about the withdrawal of Israel's troops, the lack of a time frame for allowing the Palestinian Authority to govern Gaza, and the lack of a clearer pathway to a state. The officials said their countries were in touch with U.S. officials about the changes. They spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss the behind-the-scenes talks. That may give Hamas room to try to negotiate more favorable changes into the proposal. But weakened by war and increasingly isolated in the region, it may have no choice but to go along with the plan. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Vietnamese dissident gets 11 more years for criticizing Communist Party in prison. A well-known Vietnamese dissident, has been convicted of speaking out inside prison against the ruling Communist Party and sentenced to another 11 years in a move rights activists said Tuesday highlights the country's strict suppression of any opposition. Trinh Ba Phung, who is already serving a 10-year sentence on charges of spreading anti-state propaganda, was convicted Friday by the People's Court of Da Nang for riding down with the Communist Party of Vietnam for violating human rights, down with the Communist Court for wrongfully convicting me, on a piece of paper found in his cell, according to the 88 Project, a group focusing on human rights abuses in Vietnam. The conviction was reported by opposition media based outside of Vietnam, which said Phung had denied writing the statement allegedly found in his cell. Vietnamese state-run media did not report the case, and Vietnam's Ministry of Foreign Affairs did not respond to a request for comment. Elaine Pearson, Asia Director for Human Rights Watch, said the conviction showed there was zero tolerance for dissent in Vietnam, and noted that it came as the European Union's Trade Commissioner was in Hanoi meeting with local officials looking to improve ties with Vietnam. At this time, while a senior European trade official is on a charm offensive in Hanoi, it is critical that concerned governments also raise concerns with the Vietnamese government about the crackdown on free expression and press for the release of activists like Trinh Ba Phung, detained for peaceful acts of free expression, she told the Associated Press in an email. According to a copy of the indictment obtained by the 88 Project, Phung was accused of consistently having displayed a defiant and resentful attitude toward the communist regime under Article 117 of the country's criminal code. Phung's case highlights Vietnam's tight grip on dissent, the group wrote in a report on the conviction. Vietnam routinely uses vaguely worded criminal code provisions like Article 117 to silence activists, journalists, and bloggers. The 40-year-old is a campaigner in support of human rights, land rights, and environmental protections, whose parents were imprisoned in 2014 for participating in protests themselves. Phung garnered international attention as an author of a report documenting abuses during a January 2020 raid by police in which an elderly farmer and three officers were killed during a bid to move farmers off their land, according to the 88 Project. He was arrested later that year and convicted in 2021 of spreading propaganda against the state. His most recent conviction is the first instance of a Vietnamese political prisoner being prosecuted for their speech while already imprisoned, according to the 88 Project. From the perspective of international law, Phung was merely protesting human rights abuses by the Vietnamese government and his alleged wrongful conviction, the group said. Serbia arrests 11 for allegedly placing pig heads and other racial hatred acts in Europe. Serbia this week arrested 11 people suspected of spreading racial hatred in European countries on the instructions from a foreign intelligence service, including placing pig heads outside Muslim religious sites in Paris, officials said. Serbian police said in a statement Monday that the group was detained over incidents in France and Germany that took place between April and September. A suspected organizer, who Serbian police said acted on instructions from an unidentified foreign security agency, remains at large. The police statement did not specify the foreign agency. French authorities characterized the depositing of pig heads near Paris area mosques earlier this month as an attempted foreign interference effort, demonstrating a manifest desire to provoke trouble in the heart of the nation. French authorities did not name any country, but the incident bore possible hallmarks of previous suspected Russian-linked acts of attempted destabilization that have targeted France and other allies of Ukraine. Mapping by the Associated Press of alleged disruption efforts by Russia and its proxies has documented dozens of attacks and other incidents across Europe, with France and Germany, another key ally of Ukraine, among the principal targets. The Serbian police said the suspects were detained in Belgrade and another town. The terse statement said the alleged instructor, who was not named, had organized and trained the group to help incite hatred, discrimination, and violence in both Germany and France. Serbia's autocratic president, Aleksandar Vučić, has maintained close relations with Russia, while Serbia remains the only country in Europe that has not imposed sanctions on Moscow over the war in Ukraine, even as Belgrade formally seeks European Union membership. Just days ago, Serbia arrested two suspects over alleged training of more than 100 foreign nationals to incite riots during a key election in Moldova last weekend, which was won by the country's pro-Western government. In France, the pig heads were discovered near nine Paris-area mosques, and five of them were written with the surname of French President Emmanuel Macron, authorities said. A farmer in France's Normandy region alerted police that two people had bought about 10 pigs from him, and he identified their car as having Serbian license plates, the Paris prosecutor's office said. The car was then filmed by security cameras in Paris, which also spotted two men depositing heads in front of mosques, the prosecutor's office said. It said the men were foreign nationals without identifying their country, and that they left France immediately afterward with a Croatia-registered phone they were believed to be using tracked crossing the border with Belgium. In May, a Paris Holocaust memorial, three synagogues, and a restaurant were daubed with green paint, French media reported. The attack was reminiscent of an earlier act of vandalism in May 2024, when a Paris memorial honoring people who distinguished themselves by helping to rescue Jews in France during the country's Nazi occupation in World War II was defaced with painted blood-red hands. A French intelligence report said the Russian intelligence agency, FSB, ordered that attack. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the September 30th issue of the Toronto Star. Your reader has been Brian. Thank you for listening.